In November of 1981, Comcast Sportsnet, then called Prism New England, began broadcasting Boston Celtics games. Earlier that year, Larry Bird led the Green to their 14th NBA title in only his second season. Hello, everyone. This is Kyle Draper, and welcome to episode 4 of Into the Archives, as we bring you another one of the great Celtics interviews we have done over the years. Bird went on to become one of the greatest players in NBA history, winning two more titles in 1984 and 1986. Following the 1992 season, Bird announced he would retire. In February of 1993, the Celtics would hold Larry Bird Night at the old Boston Garden as his number was raised to the rafters. A few days later, Bird sat down with Mike Gorman to discuss his memorable career.
Do you remember when you first picked up a basketball? How old you were?
I don't remember when I first picked one up, but I remember when I first when I received my first basketball. It was Christmas time, and I remember how happy I was.
Was this kind of love at first sight with the game, or did it take a
while? No, it took a while. I don't think I really fell in love with it until I was probably a freshman in high school. But we played a lot of sports as young kids. We played softball, baseball, football, whatever season it was, that's what sport we played. But we played more baseball, more softball than we did basketball.
Once you started in high school to get really into it, I mean, did you consciously make up your mind, like, hey, I'm going to define myself now by basketball? I've heard you say once you started playing, you played all the time, going to school at 6 in the morning.
What I wanted to do is, after watching my brothers play in high school and watching them compete and see how much enjoyment they got out of it, I just wanted to be a good player on our high school team. I wanted to be the guy that in our small town everybody was going, hey, he's a good player. He really worked hard, and he's really killing them guys out there every night. That's all I wanted to be, and one thing led to another.
You took that, obviously, to a very high level at high school, and did you? I've read a lot about the time that you were at Spring Valley. Did you take a certain pride? I mean, this was an economically depressed area, and yet on a Friday night or a Saturday night, I'm not sure which it was, when you guys would play, I mean, everybody came to the games. Did you take a pride in the fact that you were giving these people something, giving them something to get excited about? Or was
it? I thought I was giving them something to yell about, but in return, I was getting something back. It wasn't that I was just out there to put on a show for them. Mm-hmm. I was trying to develop my skills to a point where they would appreciate them. And when they hollered and screamed, when they got excited, that's where I got my feedback. And I needed it just as bad as they did.
When you left Indiana, University of Indiana, and came home, was there at any point where you thought, maybe this is it? Okay, I've given it a shot now. I don't particularly like it. I'm going to go on with my life. Or did you still think, I'm going to go back to school somewhere else?
I felt I would go back to school. I probably had more pressure on me after I quit IU than any time in my life. I didn't think I got treated fairly. But I've learned to forgive and forget. But it seemed like everybody was down on me at the time. And it took a lot of months to get over it. But I did get a job, and I worked, and I saved my money. And then once I went back to school, I was prepared for the situation that I was getting ready to go into. I had some money in the bank, I had some clothes, and I had a better feeling about myself. Because when I left high school to go to Indiana University, I just turned 18 years old. And sitting out a year really helped me.
That we can't quite understand that out here, can we? The passion that exists over the basketball. I mean, again, I remember in reading about your life that was a very difficult time for you. A lot of people felt you had turned your back on motherhood and apple pie there, didn't they?
Well, especially from that area. There's not a lot of times when a kid from a small town makes it to a big university like, especially in Indiana, going from a real small town and really a lot of people never heard of me because we didn't get a lot of press, and going and playing for Bobby Knight. Yeah, it was, I think people looked upon me like a failure, and in some sense I was at that university, but I knew that if I stuck with it, I could get a degree and go on and make something of myself.
Were you heavily recruited in high school there?
Oh, I probably had 200 or 300 colleges after me, and it varied from small colleges all the way up to major universities.
Did you ever consider anywhere else other than Indiana?
Indiana State, Kentucky. And, you know, that's why I always felt that...
They never would have let you back if you went to Kentucky, would they?
Well, I went down to visit Kentucky, but they told me a kid named Rick Roby was going to get the spot a couple weeks later. So I know I went down there just to visit, and I liked it. I thought it was a great program. I liked what I seen, but it seemed like every place I went, I liked. So I kept my visits down. I think I just went to three. Then they had a story where I went to the airport and was supposed to get on a plane to Florida State, and I seen how big the airplane was, and I left. That's not true. The only reason I didn't go is because on all the other trips, they let my high school coach go, and I felt comfortable. On this trip, they said he couldn't go, and that's the reason I backed out.
Indiana State, what made you decide that was where you wanted to be?
Well, it was a smaller school, and I felt that I had some friends that attended there, and when I went to visit them, they sort of hung around with not just one or two guys from their own town. They hung around with a lot of different people. It seemed like everybody knew everybody, and just felt more comfortable up there, and I felt that was the place that I probably should have went at the beginning.
You made a heck of a comeback, too, in terms of popularity there, too, didn't you?
Yeah, I think I did a pretty good job.
A guy named Rick Shaw, is that name ring a bell?
He was our assistant trainer. Yeah.
He said it used to be like Elvis trying to run down the ramp. He used to hang on to the back of him and trying to get through the fans. Is
it? Well, I don't think it was that bad, but it really wasn't fans. It was students. I was a student, they were students, and all they were trying to do is get us pumped up for the game. I knew every one of them, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
It wasn't like that, though. I remember you saying before you went to Indiana State, I remember a humorous quote I had read that you said people used to fall asleep in the stands and knit and do all sorts of stuff up there.
The one reason that I really didn't like Indiana State at the beginning, because I went to one of the games, and it was pretty boring. I went to watch them play against Centenary when Robert Parrish was there, and I remember Robert putting on a great show, and I thought I knew he was going to be a great player in the pros, and he's the only thing that really caught my eye. I was a little disappointed in the way that the Sycamores played at the time, and they really didn't have a lot of enthusiasm, and I just didn't like that environment.
You averaged, I think it was around 33 a game as a sophomore, which was, I think that's the year before your softball injury, is that right?
2 years
before. 2 years before.
Yeah.
Were you a much better player before that injury? Better shooter?
Better player, no. better shooter, I don't know. I shot pretty well back then. I had a better feel of the ball with my right hand. I have two bad fingers now, and I think at times I couldn't grip the ball the way I wanted to. I used to be able to palm it real easy, and I have trouble later on in the years. But it was a big adjustment, and I made it through it. I remember the doctor that did the surgery on it said, I just wish you best of luck because I don't know how this is going to turn out. I don't know if you're going to be able to compete every night, because I don't know if it's going to stay together. But I have never, ever had a problem with it. Only time I had a problem with it was in the playoffs in 85. I had it jammed, and it got swollen a little bit. But it really didn't bother me because it don't bend anyway. And so I made the adjustments.
You mentioned that you was a real down period of your life when you left Indiana, and a lot of people kind of get down on you, and then you go to Indiana State and everybody's back on your bandwagon again. Did that teach you something? I mean, the old famous fleeting?
Well, I understood most of it, because coming from a small town, like I said earlier, it was not very often you see a kid from a small town get an opportunity to play big time basketball, and everybody was riding my coattail because it was like one of their own. Like one of their sons. Hey,
that was okay
with you.
Of
it. It was okay with me. But once I left, I knew I was going to catch a lot of heat. But when I made the decision, I didn't care who talked to me. I was not going back, because I knew I needed a year to sit out, regain my thoughts, and go to a university where I felt comfortable.
At Indiana State, it took a while for the national media and the national polls to catch up with how good both you and your team were. Did you know all along that you guys could go out and play with anybody?
Well, my sophomore year, I really didn't know, because I was learning how to play college basketball. I remember I had a great scoring year, and I averaged a lot of rebounds. But my junior year, I thought we had our best team. We started off 14-0 and ranked two or three in the country. Then we lose five in a row. And right then is when I learned a lot about chemistry on a basketball team. When you're winning, we had a lot of chemistry. But once we lost one game, everybody started pointing fingers, and everybody started going their own direction. We ended up losing 9 games that year, but we had a lot more talent in my junior year than we did my senior year.
What memories do you carry with you of the Final Four?
Not many, because it happened so fast. There were a lot of pressure on myself to carry a team and do as well as I possibly could. Nobody ever anticipated us going to the finals. I didn't even think we were good enough to go to the finals because we had too many liabilities. We had guys that couldn't really shoot free throws. I figured the coaches would take advantage of that as we went along, but they didn't. But I don't know. The one thing that I remember most about it was after we played the first game against DePaul, how tired I was. I mean, I was fatigued for almost 2 days after until the game Monday night, because I never really played out on the West Coast. The altitude really hit me, and it hit me hard. I can just remember I was just wanting to go to sleep all the time. I thought I was sick, but they kept saying it was the altitude. But, that's really the only thing I have memories of, because I can just remember how tired I was for 2 days.
It was that the first real experience you had, too, with the national media truly descending on you?
Well, there were a lot of them there. There's no question about that. They, I don't know, in college they protect you a little bit better than they do in the pro professional leagues. But I don't know, it really wasn't that big of a deal. I made up my mind earlier in the season, I wasn't going to say too much. I wasn't going to talk to them unless it was the right circumstances. And I knew that there'd be a lot of them there, and they were. But the one thing about them, they all wanted to do individual interviews, and it was just impossible.
The Celtics, of course, drafted you at the end of your junior year, Red planning to sign you in that window between when you played your last game as a senior and when you could go back into the draft again. Were there times in that window where you thought, maybe I'll just go back in the draft again and see what happens, or had you pretty much made up your mind you were going to be a Celtic?
Well, I thought that since they drafted me and they were going to wait a year on me, I at least owed them something. I was going to give them every opportunity. I know the negotiations were a little scary out here for the fans, but to me, I never heard any of it. All I knew was when Mr. Wolford called me and say that, you know, things are not moving as smoothly as we like, but we'll get it done. But I always thought that I would be a Boston Celtic, and I felt that I should be, because they were going to wait a whole year for me.
I remember hearing you tell a story once you came to Boston. I think the Celtics were playing the Nets. I think it was.
Yeah, it was.
About 7,000 or 8,000 people in the stands, and I remember hearing you say you figured, well, this is the way it'll probably be. This is kind of comfortable, not too many people around.
Well, they had, I only might have had 9,000 in there. It was over 8, okay. I think, almost 9. And there was a lot of empty seats, probably a lot of no shows. And the crowd was into it. The people there were into it. And I thought, well, if I come here, maybe there'll be 1,000, 2,000 more. And after the game went back here, there wasn't many press in the locker room. There wasn't a lot of people here. They were because of me. Everybody was saying, well, if you wasn't here, there wouldn't be this many in here. And I always felt, well, once that dies down, it'd be nice. You'd be able to walk in and out, and nobody really bother you. And from the first day I got here, I knew that it was going to be completely different than I really anticipated.
People saw you as a savior, didn't they? I mean, forget the whole thing that people talk about how you and Magic saved the league. In Boston, people saw you as a savior for the
season. Well, I really didn't think that until one day I walked into practice, probably my second or third practice, and Cedric Maxwell said, well, here comes our savior. And from then on, I knew that they were wanting me to do great things and make this team a winner.
How about the adjustment coming to Boston, having to live at least a portion of the year in Boston? Was that hard?
Not really. The only thing that bothered me about Boston was the traffic. You head to the Garden one night for a game and it'd be, you know, 20-minute ride. The next night it'd be an hour and 10-minute ride, and I never could figure it out. That's the only thing. A lot of times, I remember me and Rick Roby one time stopped the car on Storrel Drive and got out and really jogged all the way to the Garden and found the kid in another car to drive a car to the Garden, because we would never made it to the game, and we got there about 10 minutes to spare. But that was really the only time that we had problems. Anymore, it's a little bit better. But I tell you, I've been pretty excited about Boston ever since I've been here. I spent 9 months a year here and 3 in Indiana, and I have no complaints.
The story's often been told about in Marshfield, you knew right away that you were going to be a good player at this level. When did you determine also at the same time that you could be a leader of this team right away? Or were you just going to let your actions speak for themselves?
No, I was always the type of guy that lead by example. But after being on the team for a while, knowing the type of guy ML is, he's very vocal. Maxwell, some of the other guys like Parrish really never said much. After a while, I could tell that the press put me in a situation that I'm supposed to say things. I'm supposed to be the leader. But I didn't have to, because if I did something on the court, I knew the guys were going to follow. If I was fired up and I got excited about a game or a play, they would get excited. So I just sort of let my game dictate of how I should act out there. If I knew guys needed a little push, I'd try to help them out.
You often hear athletes who are fortunate enough to win multiple championships say they never forget the first. True with the 81 championship?
I remember the first very well. I can almost replay that game in my head. But the reason is because everybody on that team, except one, has never had success, especially at the pro level, and most and all of us but one never had it in the college level. So it was a group of guys that really never tasted success, and this was a time for guys from really small colleges. A lot of us were from very small colleges, got together, and we won a world championship, and that's why it was so special.
Speaking too about that team, I watched you when you came out onto the floor for your night, and I was touched by your reaction when you saw Bill Fitch. Obviously, there's a special relationship there between the two of you.
Well, me and Coach Fitch had our ups and downs, like he's had his ups and downs with everybody. I mean, I was always on the hot seat. We always call it the hot seat after practice, when he pull you aside and make you sit down there. He'd get this far away from your face and start telling you how bad you are and how rotten you are and what kind of person you are. But I've always respected Bill Fitch, because I always thought he was prepared for every game. He put the time in. If you showed that you want to put the time in, he'd stay right with you. I still think he's probably the smartest coach I ever played for, and probably the best coach as far as being prepared night in and night out. And the only thing that really makes me mad about him is when he left the Celtics, he went to Houston, they said he got soft, you know. But he was tough on me.
It's hard to
believe. It's hard to believe, but I heard he got soft and I didn't like it.
Much has been written and said, and deservedly so, about the Celtic-Laker rivalry, but sometimes when I hear so much of it, I think that the Celtic-Sixer rivalry gets a little short shift in that.
And that was
a wonderful, wonderful
rivalry. It was our best rivalry since I've been here. I mean, you ask any of the guys on the 81-84 team, especially in that area, just ask them about it. They'll tell you. I mean, the Lakers were a great rivalry, but you just played them twice a year during the regular season, and if you was lucky enough, you got to play them in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But with Philadelphia, you knew they was going to be there every year. You was going to play them at least two times in exhibition, at least six times during the regular season, and always six or seven games in the playoffs. So there's a lot of
different atmosphere going in the Spectrum, too, as opposed to
a lot different. A lot different.
Forum.
A lot different.
A lot of coaches, I know, you can just mention a game, and they can tell you everything that happened in it, even though the game maybe years ago. I think back to November of 84, a game against the Sixers. People tend to want to remember the game because of the altercation you and Dr. J had. What I remember the game for is I think you had 42 points in about 30 minutes of play that night.
I was hot.
You were as on as one of the top two or three times I've ever seen you on. Do you remember that game well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Were you hot?
Very hot.
Very hot. When you scored 60 down in New Orleans against the Hawks, again, I tend to remember watching the Atlanta players giving themselves high fives and falling off the benches. You were making shots towards the end of the game. Does that game stand out in your mind?
The only reason that game stands out in my mind is because I ran in a race, a 5-mile race, 2 days before that, and I can remember how sore I was. I was so sore, I didn't think I was going to be able to run up and down the court. So I went over early in the pregame and ran about 3 miles just to get loose. And I wasn't fatigued or anything, but I was sort of disappointed that I didn't think I was going to be able to play my best that night. And because we were playing in New Orleans, and a whole new group of fans, and you always want to play well when you go into a new place with new people. And things sort of came around for me. The one thing I remember about that game is I was standing at the free throw line, and for some reason they was announcing how many points everybody had every time you do something at the free throw line. And a guy goes, Larry Bird just hit his 51st point. I'm going, 51 points? That can't be right. You know, I didn't even realize I had that many. Then the next two or three shots, it sort of fired me up, because the next two or three shots I took out there were wild shots.
You hit one late in the game that was, I can remember
in
front of
one in, I hit one in the corner and one in front of their bench.
In front of their bench.
And I got fouled on, and they didn't count it. But them were tough shots. I shot one on the opposite side of the baseline, which I knew I was hot, and I just wanted to see if I could make it. We always called them heat checks.
The 84 championship, because it was against the Lakers, because it was against Magic, was there any payback involved there?
A little bit. I knew everybody in Terre Haute would be watching that game. They watched the whole series, but especially Game 7. Since we was defeated in college and everybody back here wanted me to at least beat him one time, it was very special. It really wasn't a payback where I really owed him something, but I wanted to compete on a level that Magic was competing on, especially in the finals and final games, and we got through it.
It was obvious from your ceremonies the other night that you and Magic have a special relationship, but that didn't come quickly, right? I mean, that took a while, didn't it?
Well, I really didn't know Magic that well. I really never seen him other than the times we played against him on the court. And when I step on a basketball court, I know I don't want to talk to anyone, and he's the same way. And after the game, there was always a lot of people around. You never had a chance to sit down and talk. But once we got together and did things, we realized that, you know, basketball is a great game, and we love to compete at it, but there's no use to disliking one another.
Was it that he had mentioned that night, that television commercial? Was that what kind of put you guys on a
different
level? Yeah,
the one thing that was good about it was it wasn't in a studio. It was at my house. Mm-hmm. And both of us could relax because once we got tired of shooting, we'd go into the house, just me and him, and watch TV or just hang around. There wasn't a lot of people around because they couldn't get there. We kept it quiet, and once it was starting to film, people sort of stood around the gate and watched. But it wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, we did get to know one another. We got to ride the four-wheelers together, and we just had fun.
The 86 championship, is that as good a team as you've played on?
Yeah, it's the best team by far because everybody was in their prime. I felt that was probably my best year. I thought Chief was playing very well. DJ was, everybody was on top of Kevin McHale. Nobody could stop him that year. Plus, we had Scotty Wimmen, Bill Walton, and Jerry Sichting all coming off the bench, where Bill made them a lot better. If Robert wasn't playing well or needed a break, we didn't lose nothing when Bill came in, which I felt over the years we did lose a little bit when we took Robert Parrish out of the game because he was one of the best centers, one of the top two centers, I thought, in the league ever since I got here. And once you took him out of the game, you lose everything. But once we replaced him with Bill, we didn't lose anything.
Plus, I've heard you say you achieved something in that final that in all the basketball games you'd ever played, you had never achieved before. Is that true?
Yeah, it was the ultimate high that I've always chased, it seems like, for a basketball game. You know, I always got fired up and always got pumped up, but not in 86. 86, I went home without almost 2 days. I didn't have any sleep at all. And I was so fired up for the game that couldn't wait to get down there. I was so antsy around the house, and I thought fatigue was setting in. But usually when you step on the court, all the nervousness goes away and you're ready to play basketball. That day, it was completely opposite. It stayed with me the whole game, and I was in a high and really
a
so-called
back,
zone.
Was there a reason for it, or did it just happen?
I don't know.
You'd bottle it if you could, right?
Well, I mean, I've been psyched up before, but nothing like that. I mean, I could have, after that game, I could have jogged probably a marathon. I mean, I was just so pumped up. I just never ran out of energy. And, you know, you just get so tense and so jittery, all your muscles start shaking and your heart starts pumping. It's an amazing feeling. Mm-hmm. But I really thought that I was having a heart attack at the end.
I've heard you say that when you came to Boston, you thought you could win four or five championships. Does that bother you at all?
Yeah, a little bit. It bothers me because in 81 we had a great basketball team, and I felt we were just going to improve because we'd just been together 1 year with Kevin and Robert, and we didn't win to 84. Well, 84 we had a great team. We should have won in 85, but we had some injuries. Of course, LA had a great team too. We should have had a better opportunity to win it. In 86 we won it, and we had number two draft choice in the league, and Bill comes back, and he's hurt, and you know, everything just fell apart. So I really felt that we should have won five. But we also was very fortunate because if it wasn't for Jerry Henderson stealing the ball in 84, we wouldn't have won that one. And in 81, we came back from Philadelphia 3-1, down 3-1. So if you look at it that way, we could have just won one, but we're lucky enough to win three.
When did the back first start to kick up?
1980.
1980?
When I first felt it.
Really? And I think it was, at least publicly, it wasn't until about 85 that you actually missed a game or two.
Right.
And it was acknowledged.
Well,
that
it, it started coming on. I had, I felt the nerve in 1980 because sitting on a trainer's table trying to get my ankle taped, I had to lay on the side to get it taped. And they just said it was a sciatic nerve, it'll come and go, which it did. But I never had any treatment or anything on it. I just iced it down and went on. But over the years, it started catching up with me.
You were MVP three straight times. Obviously, you won three world championships. Is there anything special? Is there one thing in your career that you're more proud of than anything else? I mean, go right back to high school, go right back to Indiana State. Is there one thing that
well,
you had to hang your hat on?
There's more than one. You can't just hang your hat on one, because it's like somebody said, pick your best game out. Well, I played in over 1,000 games.
Yeah.
But I think leading Indiana State to the finals, a small school, which I was very proud of, I'm still very proud of doing that. But coming to Boston when the team was down, and Emil Carr coming back, and Dave and Tiny and everybody, and winning championships with people that's never won before. Being on teams that the guys really worked hard for each other, knowing just 12 guys when he's getting beat every night, that was sticking together and ended up winning championship. Playing with Bill Walton, Robert Parrish, guys like that. I was very fortunate. I played with some of the greatest players in the world and some of the best individuals. Casey Jones, he is the nicest man I've ever met in my life, bar none. I mean, so I've been very fortunate. And it's hard to just pick out one, but I got a lot of memories of basketball, but I know it's all over with and it's gone, and now I have to find more memories.
Was there a certain finality, as wonderful as that ceremony was the other night, was there a certain finality to it all?
Well, see, I was so nervous about that because it was the first time anything like this has been done, and nobody knew how it was going to come off, and somebody told me that, I don't really read the papers, but somebody told me there's a guy wrote an article, said, hey, it all boils down to Larry Bird. If he comes out and he does a good job, if he acts like he's interested in it, it'll come off good. If not, it'll be a big bore. And I knew that, and I had enough pressure on me anyway, so I had to try to make it the best I possibly could because I was so nervous. And I wanted to be there, and I wanted to thank the fans, but I also wanted to be the hell out of there. Didn't want nothing to do with it. But I think it turned out well. The feedback that we're getting and the feedback that I'm getting is people really enjoy it. They felt it was an honor to be there, and I felt it was an honor myself to be there, and it was one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life. If a player has to go out, that's the way to go out. Because when I walked out, right before I walked out, I was really nervous, and I really didn't want to go out there. Then once I walked out there, the one way I always could tell if there's a lot of people in the garden is I looked up at the boxes, and the boxes were full, and people were hanging out over the side. That's when I almost turned around and walked back out because I was really nervous.
When you walked out with Connor at the end, though, did it hit you that, like, I really am Larry Bird, like, ex-player or executive or
no,
tennis pro or whatever?
No, I'm always in a fog when them things go on. It's just like I never really appreciate a basketball game until I can sit back and watch it on film and say, hey, yeah, I remember that. That was great. You know, that's it. When I was doing it, it wasn't that great.
You watched them? You did watch them?
I watched them earlier in my career because I could always thought I could improve on certain things. But once I started getting the injuries, there was really no use to watch them because I couldn't get my body to do what I wanted to do. But earlier in the career, I watched every game that you ever did, Mike.
No, really?
I watched all of them.
I'm glad you're still talking to me.
But you have to. You know, I have to watch and see what the other team's doing, or if we was getting ready to play a team like Philadelphia, I'd save a lot of the games and watch them play or get a tape from somebody because it really helps out. When they come down off the break, you want to see what kind of play, you can anticipate a lot better. And I used it to my benefit. I didn't watch the games to watch moves I made. I watched the games to see how I can defeat somebody or how I can make a move on the guy next time, you know, what's his weakness. And it really helped me my first 8 or 9 years in the league because I watched all of them, not every one of them. But I always watched, if we was on the West Coast, we played 6 games, when we came back, just when I got home, I watched that last game so I could use it for the next game.
I'd be negligent if I didn't ask you about the experience last summer in Barcelona. Rank up there with some of the other stuff?
Well, it's a completely different feeling playing for your country and playing with the guys that you know you're going to win with compared to to the Boston Celtic teams. I really didn't know if we could beat all them teams. I was always worried about the letdown factor. But the first game we played against Cuba in Portland, we beat them by 72 points. From then on, I had my feel, and I really didn't care much about playing a lot of minutes. Then my back started acting up. It's a great experience, one of the greatest experiences I ever had. But to tell you the truth, the way I felt over with my back and everything in the competition, it was sort of a disappointment. I mean, a gold medal is the greatest thing in the world, but being an athlete like me and Magic and Mike and all the guys over has been, and you play against the greatest competition, and you know you have to play at your best every night and perform well, and going over and sort of picking on these guys like we did was sort of a disappointment.
Were you surprised? I had a chance to see it firsthand. You all were like rock stars over there. I mean, you couldn't.
Well, Michael and Magic were. Everybody else sort of got out of the way.
Did that surprise you, though? I mean, in Spain to be.
No. No? Because we played in Madrid one time. It was basically the same way. The one thing that we have over here, we have such good security that people can't get around you. I think it would be like that here in the States with a lot of the players in our league. But they're so good. I remember when I first came in the league, you just had to park your bus outside. Now the bus goes right into the arenas, which that eliminates a lot of people hanging around and milling around. And that keeps the people away that want to cause trouble. So I really wasn't surprised by anything over there. I thought that Michael Jordan's probably, I have so much respect for Michael Jordan because of that experience, because he didn't try to pull all that attention to him. He tried to get away from it. He did his own things without a lot of people knowing it. And I respect him for that because he could have really stirred up in people over there if he got out and ran around and tried to draw attention to himself. But he's not that type of person. And I really felt that he did a great job by letting the other players have their say and their due. And it meant a lot to everybody because he did that.
I saw you over in Barcelona and the other night with Connor. Does part of you wish maybe he was a little older and could have?
Not really, because I sort of planned it. I really didn't want to have any kids. At the house when I was playing, because I really didn't have time. I was gone a lot. I was in and out. Now I have a lot of time, and it worked out good. I will never. I mean, I'm sure he knows basketball because he's always bringing one, carrying one around with him. But I hope he don't get into, how were you better than this guy? Were you better than that guy? Or what'd you do this night? How come you won them just three championships? Because I think if he's going to play sports, he's got to learn to deal with all of that himself. And that's part of the growing up phase. Part of sports is learning things yourself and trying to handle different circumstances and situations and figuring everything out on your own.
How is the Larry Bird who walked off the garden floor the other night different from the Larry Bird who first walked on that garden floor 13 years ago?
Well, the pressure's off. Once I walked right off that stage the other night, everything's off. People can say and do what they want now. My career's over. I'm finished. I did my best. I know I did my best. I try to give the fans something back. We had a good relationship because I feel I'm just like the fans. If I wasn't playing basketball, I'd be sitting up there and watching it just like they are and having a good time. When I left that center court the other night, all the pressure's off me. Now the pressure's on the other guys because I can't win, lose games. Or I can't win, lose championships for them anymore.
Do you worry at all, or are you concerned at all that you'll be able to find a passion to replace the passion you obviously had for the game?
A little bit. I get very bored sitting around. I don't like to sit around.
You want to stay involved with the game, though?
To some extent.
Do you have a coach?
I don't know. I don't think so. The 99% chance says I won't coach. But I don't know. I can't find. I got to find something to do.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck.
Of course, history would prove that the 1% chance of becoming an NBA coach that Bird left open would turn out to become a reality in 1997, as he agreed to become head coach of the Indiana Pacers. He would win Coach of the Year in his first season, becoming the only player to win that award as a former league MVP. He also guided the Pacers to their only finals appearance in the year 2000. Thanks again for listening to episode 4 of Comcast SportsNet's Into the Archives podcast. Check out csnne.com/podcast for upcoming episodes, plus info on how to subscribe on iTunes. This is Kyle Draper, and thanks for listening.